Welcome to Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between, the podcast from Bespoke Family. I'm Bex.
And I'm Claire. Thanks for joining us as we tackle the ups and downs of life with children, helping you to get the best out of your time together. No rules, no judgment, just guidance. So grab a cuppa and let's get started with today's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. This episode is all about looking after poorly children. So children who pick up bugs from other children, you know, those annoying bugs that you get, particularly when children go back to school and nursery, and you just seem to be like super spreader bugs that you get about 100 million times worse than your children actually seem to get. I don't know why that is. Your children seem to be ill, but you seem to be like at death's door when you get anything, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Feels like that.
When I first started looking after children, picked up everything. It didn't help that I had horrendous tonsillitis for quite a long time as well. Used to get that every month. And I really do think that once you've worked with children and picked up all the bugs, it's a bit like being a doctor. Like, your immunity must just get so tested. And I think as a parent, when your child first starts at nursery or school and they bring it back, and like you said, they can be absolutely fine and you are flawed. It's like the worst. So if they bring back they might be sick once, or they might have a bit of a runny nose and a bit of a temperature, you have got full-blown
flu.
Like flu. It's unreal. There's just something about the germs
really
that children
is.
Spread that just, from an adult's perspective, is brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal. Can I just say this before we kind of start, that as long as children aren't too ill, I quite liked looking after ill children. That's awful, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
As long as
you're going to put that out in the public domain, Bex. You have mentioned it a few times before, but I can't believe you're actually going to go out there and put it out there going you quite liked it when your two
in
were
public.
A little bit unwell because they were cuddlier.
They were really, really cuddly. They'd watch a film. We didn't have to do very much. I mean, obviously, if it was disruptive to work then and like made things difficult, then that was hard, you know. But if it was kind of like when I was off or at the weekend or something, and we could all just snuggle down under a blanket and they were just a little bit like, that was fine. So don't feel guilty if that is you as well. Just saying. I mean, come on. Keeping it real, everybody. But I mean, you know, you've got to kind of take the wins sometimes, haven't you? Obviously, you don't want your children to be ill, of course, but, you know.
No.
Anyway, so when is the most common time? I mean, is there a common time? I mean, I would imagine we're recording this as children go back to nursery and school.
September.
I'm imagining that this is quite key time. But I might be wrong.
No, and I think there's always those patterns. Winter's always going to be worse because we're all inside much more. We've got those bugs. They're sharing the toys. They are coughing and spluttering. We are in, and we've got things like central heating on. So the bugs seem to develop a bit more whereas in the summer, we're outdoors more. There's more fresh air. We obviously have the big school summer holidays. So, however, throughout the year, you get your summer colds, you get your summer sickness bugs, and then through the winter, you're getting all those bugs as well. And then weirdly, chickenpox, although that's not really, we're not talking about all those sorts of things, but chickenpox sort of sits in there with, we always used to find patterns of the year where around February, March, in nursery, we'd always have a block of children go down with chicken pox. And obviously once one's got it, they've all kind of tend to get it. And you tend to find there's similar times of the year. Now, that could all change because of the new vaccine situation and the chickenpox vaccine coming in as part of routine vaccines, which is a huge thing to have
kind of... what does that actually mean for people then in terms of the vaccines? Because before you had to pay for it, didn't you?
You did. And you have to have you had two chickenpox vaccines and you had to pay for them privately. And some people did it for various different reasons. Some children in the family have had it really badly. Some adults haven't had it, so they didn't want the children to get it. Some people just didn't want their children to have chickenpox because... a lot of people will say, I had chickenpox and it was absolutely fine. Some children can get incredibly unwell with it. Mm-hmm. And it can be quite a traumatic kind of illness to get. And so there's been this vaccine that you could have privately. However, it has just been announced that going forward, it will go as part of the MMR vaccine, so it will go in as that, and you will children will naturally, so babies going forward will become part of that vaccine. And there's certain dates with regards to if your child is within certain age group, they will be called back to have the vaccine, and if you're over a certain age group, then they will have missed that, and so you would have to probably look at it privately. But going forward, the likelihood is that it will be that children will have it as a routine vaccine. So chickenpox might become
one of those things you don't need to talk about that much
and don't
anymore.
See so much. So
if you've got obviously if we're talking about children with lots of coughs and colds and sniffles and things like that, there are things I'm assuming that everybody knows from COVID about singing happy birthday while you wash your hands type thing.
Yeah.
Although it's so funny, like today I thought of that. I don't know what made me think of it, but while I was washing my hands, it's just such a funny thing, isn't it? But, you know, people know about much more aware of the washing hands type thing. Mm-hmm. And so the hygiene is really important, isn't it, to keep...
Yeah.
And I think people are more aware, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think the other thing to have come out of COVID was hand sanitizer.
Yes.
I think people tend to carry that more than they ever used to. And so, again, it's just being kind of careful with hand washing, particularly when you have the coughs and colds and, you know, you're wiping those snotty noses and there's the sneezing and the coughing, trying to get them, you know, the other thing is coughing into your elbow and trying to get them to do that, wiping their nose and putting their tissue and then washing their hands. If they haven't got access to hand wash, then go into the hand sanitizer. But those hygiene practices are really key, and I would say for little ones, for those that are still putting things to their mouth, particularly toys and things like that, if you are, you know, having people round as play dates and stuff, just giving the toys a wash over every week or so, just even if it's with antibacterial spray and wiping over, it just stops that spread that little bit more. And when you leave like soft play, that's the thing that we tend to go to more in the winter because the weather's rubbish. And I believe that soft play is a great thing, or, you know, for lots of children it's brilliant, but for bugs,
well, you've got all those balls, haven't you? There's no way you can
balls,
clean all
you've got
those,
everything their hand, little hands are all over the place. It is a real bug fest.
But then that said, you don't want to completely stop your children getting everything, do you?
So and they will get it, but it might be that making sure that they wash their hands off before you leave or once you've got home, those sorts of things. After activities like soft play and stuff, I might just in the winter be a little bit more kind of conscious of,
and before they eat and things like that. I know Ben went to the gym the other day and he sat down and I'm like, Ben, He's 19, obviously. I'm like, you need to wash... Like, think of all the people. It's the same... It's like grown-up soft play, isn't it? The gym.
It is.
It's like, think of all the people that have touched the weights that you lifted. Oh, yeah. It's
just
grim.
Think of the sweat alone. It's grim.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's the same for us. You know, when you're going... If you go shopping and things like that, just after you finish shopping, a bit of hand sanitizer. Or wash your hands. Whatever it might be. But it does it does help to stop the spread. God, stop, we're using quite a lot of phrases from 5 years ago, aren't we?
No, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because before then, it wasn't quite so natural. And, you know, weirdly, I think people are much more aware of that, those kind of things. So the hygiene probably is a bit more second nature. I wonder if you will see, or there has been, a decrease in the number of people, although obviously people are getting more stuff because more stuff is going around because of COVID. You know, we've still got all those bugs kind of going around. But so if your little one is ill with, I mean, how do you know? I mean, obviously some children get like fevers, don't they? And they don't necessarily have a cough or a sniffle, but they might have a temperature. But what is, I'm never get this right. What is a temperature for a little one?
So really what you're looking at is lots of children run at different temperatures. We all kind of do. But the typical, once you start going over kind of 37 and a half degrees Celsius, once you start getting up above the 37.5, you're starting to go, is there something? But we also do need to remember if they had, you know, taking temperature as soon as they wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, you're warm. I'd always get them up, like wait 20 minutes to once they're out of bed, not all cozied up in their duvet. If you're then going, yeah, you're still warm, I'd then take their temperature. And looking to take the temperature in both ears. Just, you know, again, if they've been led on one side, all those sorts of things, you just want to make sure that you're getting an accurate reading. And so, yeah, being careful with the temperature. But once you start getting into kind of anything above that 38, 39, and you want to be getting that temperature down and you want to be using either paracetamol or ibuprofen, obviously not ibuprofen if you are thinking it could be chickenpox. Only paracetamol, but just seeing if you can bring it down and getting it under control once, because once a temperature spikes, you really want to be quite careful with temperatures. It is not a case of stripping them down.
Yeah, that was going to ask you about that, because a lot of people used to say that, didn't they? Like put them in a cool, like put ice on them and stuff like that. But
just like, strip them down, as in have them in light clothes. Don't, but can you imagine as an adult having a temperature and being stripped down and then ice packs put on you or whatever it might be, or put in a cool bath? It's going to put your body into shock, and so it really isn't something to look at doing. Obviously you don't want them in loads and loads of layers, and you need to be careful with the layers that you use, and again at night being careful around that. But it's certainly not a case of putting them in cold baths or anything like that, because that can just put the body into shock, because it's fighting anyway. It's fighting an infection of whatever it might be. So, yeah, being careful with, you know, temperatures, looking at the kind of getting them down with paracetamol or ibuprofen. And again, ibuprofen for chickenpox, but also if they are asthmatic. Or show any signs of that. So typically, most people go to paracetamol as the first instant. And also just making sure that they're comfortable. And you can tell when a child's coming down with something. Either they are really irritable in those first...
They're all snuggly.
Well, they can be. Or some of them can be a bit grumpy for a few days. And then you're like, what's going on? And then it comes out. Or it can be that they are really snuggly, quite lethargic, quite tired, maybe go off their food. You can start to tell when they're like, no, I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit here. Particularly when you go from like that toddler up stage, like, oh, you just want to sit there. What's going on?
Mm.
What's wrong? And then that's when you start to do the whole, let's just check your temperature. Let's just see what's going on. One thing I'd say is a really kind of key thing to do is have a medicine box or a medicine cupboard, obviously that children can't access themselves, that has all these things that you might need, whether it's your paracetamol, your ibuprofen, it might be like things like hydration sachets, because if they get a DMV bug, diarrhea and vomiting bug. I always say DMV, and then you said to me the other day, not everybody knows what that actually means. Yeah. It's a term that was used a lot at nursery. But also making sure there's a thermometer that is got batteries and is ready to go, and that it works properly. So making sure that it's testing and it's reading accurately. So
it's weird because you don't necessarily, as an adult, you're a bit like, what do I need that for? But really, when you've got children, it's surprising how often you do use it, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. I'd also tell you, it's very surprising how often you use it when you have aging parents and they potentially have a UTI. Yes.
Yeah. Would you always recommend the EL one? Because we've got one that goes on the forehead.
Yeah.
Do you know the one I mean? He doesn't touch it. It's almost like a gun.
Yeah.
Type thing.
They were very key. They came in at a point because they didn't think that the ear ones, because obviously you're putting them into someone's ear. So they were trying to find ways of having to get away from those plastic, because you have the little plastic covers that go over on the ear ones.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that in every GP that I've ever come across,
yeah, they always have the ear one, don't they?
And the hospitals all use the ear one. I think they are the most effective. I don't know how effective. We've got a forehead one and an ear one, and I've never found the forehead one as accurate.
As accurate, right, okay.
But I would always go for ear.
Yeah, I suppose it depends, doesn't it? But yeah, you're going to get a reading, aren't you? I suppose if it's high, it's going to show you it's high.
It will give you an indication, but I wouldn't have children and not have a thermometer and a decent one.
Do you know what? Yeah, we didn't have one when I was a little, obviously, because
don't worry, you were just cuddling them on the sofa under the blanket. They're fine.
Oh, you feel warm. Yeah, feeling a bit
ill. I'll snuggle with mummy.
let's put another film on. Should we get some more popcorn?
Guess how much you might be raging a temperature right now.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. More Calpol. Okay, we're fine. Oh, dear. Take no parenting lessons from me, that's for sure. Oh, poor them. I do feel a bit sorry for them.
They're all right. They've survived.
They're all right, yeah. But you do need, people always say, don't they? I mean, obviously you said about not eating, but people always say drinking is really important.
Yeah.
If you can get them to drink.
Yeah. And anything that you can get them to, you know, if it means they're not taking in fluids, and this is from like tiny, you know, if they've got a sore throat, and we have to remember that for our really little ones, they can't always articulate what hurts.
No.
So they might be having earache, but they're pointing at their mouth because actually the pain's deferring out into their gums and things like that. So you might be going, oh, your teeth hurting. And actually they've got a really sore ear. And so it is really working and looking, and are they fiddling with their ear? Are they fiddling with, what are you seeing as those signs and symptoms? But if they've got a sore throat, they're not necessarily going to want to eat. And it can hurt. And same as an ear, because I used to get massive ear infections when I was little. And to eat when you have earache is just the worst feeling. And so keep the fluids up, but whatever way you can get those fluids in, it is really, you want them to be, you know, having, going for a wee, wet nappies, whatever, you know, situation, their age they are, really making sure that those fluids, one, it flushes everything through, but as long as they're drinking, eating is a separate thing. We get very worked up when our children don't eat, but you need to remember when you're poorly, do you eat like you normally do? Not really. You just want little bits, little and often. You might have, you know, your favourite things, and you might want the same thing over and over. And I always, you know, I always, as a nanny, you'd be looking after them. You're like, what do you want to eat? You know, is there something you feel like? And they'd be like, yeah, I really want cheese on toast. Okay, great. So you go and make cheese on toast, walk back, I don't want it. Okay. Is there anything you'd like? Yeah, I want. And you're like, okay, go make it, come back. No. It's like, okay, do you want a biscuit? Like, what do you have, anything you want? Like, I just want you to have something.
And, something that I don't have to make this time.
Yes, because we're making so many things and I'm eating them. But yeah, you're there going, oh, is that the taste buds get affected? If they're in pain, they don't
actually
feel like,
especially
it.
If you've got like something like tonsillitis, you can take it, just nothing tastes right, does it? It's horrid.
No. It's the worst.
But what about it with a baby though? This doesn't apply to tiny babies. If a baby's got a temperature, you really need to like phone.
You need to be really on top of everything, and you need to be and really looking at their feeding. Are they taking on the fluids? Really, any of this doesn't necessarily. If they're under, kind of, if they're tiny, I'd say even under a year, you really need to be careful and
in touch with the doctor and 111 or somebody,
if you are
a medical
in any way concerned, then always see, and that's for any age. But
and I have to say, I would always have done that, Claire.
Good.
The doctor was at the top of our road. It was perfect.
But I would also say, don't Google random.
No, gosh.
Always refer to the NHS website.
Yeah.
Never go rogue on your Google search, because it will, you know, you go down a hole of goodness knows what. The NHS website is your most, you know,
And it gives you a step-by-step as well, doesn't it? If this happens, then do this. If this happens, is this happening? And it'll give you a... And then if that happens, then you have to do X, don't you? It is very good.
And there's
good.
Some really good apps that you...
Yeah,
the,
there are,
aren't
NHS,
there? We can put them in the show notes for people. But they are really good apps that you talk you through. You might be able to put in a symptom checker. It will then say whether they think you need to see your GP, whether you need, what you might need to do. But using things that have come from the NHS, or you know, that's our most go-to reputable kind of, for any illness, don't go on just
and
randomly.
I think that goes for, don't you think that goes for adults as well? I think nowadays, I think with anything that you've got, you know, the NHS information is excellent. In fact, whenever you go to the doctor, they appear to Google stuff. So I think it must be, but you know, but as in Google stuff, but they go to the NHS stuff, because it's
there, and
you
it's
know, they have special doctor stuff, don't they? Because
you
I
know,
think that's the
having
best
those
thing.
Apps. And the other thing I would say, to give confidence when you're looking after a child who's poorly, is having first aid training. And I know that that goes a lot, you know, it covers so much more that isn't just your basic coughs and colds that like we're talking about today, but it will talk about temperatures. It will talk about what you might need to do if things start to get, you know, worse, or what you might be looking for in case there's something else. Because, you know, we always have to think about things such as in the, you know, summer heat stroke. And so we just need to be across all of those things. And so we might think they're a bit under the weather, not 100%. They might have a bit of an upset tummy or whatever it might be, but that could be something else. So if you are keeping an eye on it, but first aid course is so valuable in giving just confidence around giving medication and feeling confident about taking a temperature and feeling confident about what you do if your child does have a high temperature, those sorts of things. The more confident you feel in these situations, the better it is for your child, because they feel your sense of calm.
And there are like online short things. You don't have, it's not like you have to go for a whole day or anything. It's like quite a quick thing that you can do. So that's, I think, you know, I think that's when my two were tiny babies, I just went on a 3-hour community thing that was on a baby basic first aid. It wasn't anything over the top, but it really did, it made me feel quite reassured that I, in an emergency, this was for an emergency, but you know, I would, it would really help. So but you always have given me loads of tips about things like coughing and sniffles. So with coughing, one of the things I remember you said about is slightly raising the mattress, is that right?
Yeah, so you need to be careful. Again, this is age dependent. So
yeah, of course, yeah.
So we don't, we want children, babies on a flat surface.
Yes.
And everything else. But as they get older, you can start to look at lying completely flat. And again, this is looking at, you know, from a safety perspective, not our tiny babies. But we don't want, you know, our older children who are struggling to breathe, if they are completely flat, they may need, you know, you can slightly prop it up. Things, humidifiers are really good to have. Other things to have if they're really blocked up and stuffy is putting like a damp flannel over the radiator with like essential oil on. So it sort of helps do that. Some of the humidifiers come with little scents in them. So they may have like the eucalyptus in them that can help. For babies and things, you can get the saline spray, saline drips to drops even, to help like stop the mucus being really solid. It can loosen the dry mucus, because they can obviously blow their nose in the same way that an older child can. And then so nasal aspirators, got to talk about these, because everybody, like, they're a thing. Now I have used them in families I've worked for, because that's been a request of theirs. They are grim. Like, there's nothing nice about them. But
you better explain what it is.
So a nasal aspirator, the kind of typical form is something that you put at the nostril, and it's like a tube, and then you have like a longer tube, and what you basically do is suck the snot out of the child's nose. It goes into the container. It doesn't, you do not get the snot up the tube, and you do not end up swallowing it unless you forget to put the filter part in. So always remember to make sure because I had one dad who thought he was being really clever, did it, and I was like, you haven't put it together properly. I was like, that isn't meant to happen.
Nice.
Gross. So always put your nasal aspirator together properly. And there are various different versions out on the market.
They're really for babies, are they?
Mainly. Some people use them up to toddlers. I know another thing that some people do is like a saline wash. So like you can put the saline up and it sort of clears out.
Right.
That... I think very few children tolerate, and I've never done it. So that's not something I've ever come across, but I have started to see it being, I think it's more common practice in different places, like for different
countries,
kind of cultures. And, but I am seeing more of it here. But yeah, the snot suckers are definitely out on the market. They can definitely help. Them. Sometimes though, if you do it too much, you have to be very gentle with what you're doing and not do it too often, because it can become quite uncomfortable. And there are certain ones that I'm not convinced that by doing it, even though there's a filter in it, I'm not convinced that you're not actually taking in the bugs. Because it just, I've known
as in
quite
you
a few
as
people,
the adult.
Yeah, I've just known quite a few people get poorly, and I'm like, is that because they've been sucking the snot out of the mouth, out of their noses?
Yeah,
which it possibly could. So they do have a place, but always put it together.
Consider
properly.
Carefully. Yes.
Yeah, because honestly, even the thought of it. I'm remembering that incident makes me gag. Grim.
That is grim, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, if they feel okay, then you want to try and get outside if you to get some fresh air. That's kind of old fashioned, kind of. That's what your granny would say.
And if you
isn't
can't
it?
get outside,
but.
Yeah, open the windows, get air through. Mm. Get some fresh air through. And the other thing, if they are really like bunged up, snotty, everything else, I would wash their bedding every day. Even if it's not kind of dirty, I would wash it every day in order to just make sure that you're not then putting them back down in the bugs that they've
reintroducing.
Yeah. It just keeps going. So, and even if it's not the whole bed, if it's an older child, changing their pillow.
Their pillow, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So. Because usually it's pretty grim anyway, isn't it?
It is, but it's just the more you can try and avoid them going back into a space that's kind of had them sneezing and coughing and everything else, then.
And how about your vapor rub, old wives' tale?
It is an old wives' tale. There's loads of these coming out now.
But do you remember the old white, the awful thing that happened at at somebody who I knew, who Ben and Amy went to school with?
Oh.
Yeah, perhaps I better not tell that story. Well, I've got to now, haven't I? Yeah, she actually gave the child Vicks to swallow. Ooh.
Yeah, which... Absolutely.
I think they never really told her that they felt ill again. I mean, that's just like dangerous,
horrific,
surely, isn't it?
Just absolute no go.
No, I mean,
nothing
that
should
is
be
just,
ingested.
Just to say, don't ever give your child Vicks to eat.
Never. I don't even know. No, absolutely not.
Oh God, it was just,
yeah.
Poor child.
So again, not the actual Vicks, because that is for adults. But there's like the baby.
Oh,
like,
is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Snuffle babe, or the baby vapor rub, those sorts of things, which are especially for babies. You can put those. Some people believe it. I kind of do think it makes a difference. But putting some.
Well, I've done it for Ben, and it did work.
A layer, just rubbing some on the bottom of their feet and popping a pair of socks over the top. And it does seem to help with coughing.
Mm.
There is also some crazy stuff out there on social media about putting a cut onion under your child's bed to help them stop coughing.
Okay.
Never tried it.
One thing I'd say is it
absolutely must reek.
Again,
it's a bit of a wives' tale. Who knows? Some people swear by it, some people don't. But obviously, with everything, you always follow kind of manufacturers.
Caution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Things like Albasoil. Do you remember that? We used to have this at home all the time. And it would be the first thing that come out as soon as I was ever ill. Mm-hmm. But it's so, so important that you don't put it anywhere near your child, in that it can really affect eyes, and so you don't want to be put it on their mattress and stuff. You want to put it somewhere in their room that they can then get the smell of it, but you don't want
even the children's one.
Hmm.
Oh, I used to sprinkle it on their pillow.
Don't worry, so did so did my mum.
So did
so did most of the country, probably.
Yeah,
but
I know, but
there's been
you
there
shouldn't.
Have been
no. Oh, really?
No.
See, this is the thing, isn't it? And so, obviously, this woman that I said about, she obviously just She did it, and I
mean,
I know.
Always read what it says.
Yeah. Well, this
and
is the thing.
It pretty much
isn't
says
it?
Don't ingest it.
Don't ingest, yeah. But I mean, I'm just saying it because I think, you know, these things, people think, oh, they must have done it. You know, you just have to be ever so careful. Like you say, anything that you're doing, you need to read. And just make sure that even if it's an old wives' tale, it's a bit like those things where people are saying about the, I mean, obviously this isn't health related, but, you know, cutting holes in the dummies.
Yeah.
You know, that's not... It might help, but it's damaging something, isn't it? That's gonna
you're giving it to the child. Like I said, there's going to be loads of stuff that happened when we were little that our parents did. You know.
Well, my dad's told me, because I've had toothache recently, and all he keeps telling me is to put some brandy on cotton wool and put it on my tooth. I mean, he keeps telling me to do it.
Yep.
He has warned me not to drive after I've done it. Yeah. But I mean, literally, but they used to do that when I was little. Mm-hmm. Brandy. I mean,
yeah,
like...
I bet you slept. Wow.
That's probably why they did it.
Yeah.
I know.
Again, it's those things, isn't it? That everyone, and it didn't do you any harm. You all right?
Well,
don't know what you're worrying about. Yeah. It's like, no, but we are more aware of stuff now.
And by the way, a brandy bottle doesn't say don't give it to children. And put it just putting it out there.
Just putting it out there, it's alcohol, it's not okay.
It might not say it on the bottle, but you shouldn't do it, Dad.
But like Albus Oil, you know, is great. It just shouldn't be close to the child.
Okay.
Or on an object of the child, like a comforter of the child and whatever.
Hmm. But I mean, the most important thing is to be aware of your child and like know how ill they are.
You know your child.
One,
and routine will change. Eating habits, we said. Mm-hmm. Sleeping habits are likely to change. One thing to be kind of aware of is what we can end up doing when they're poorly. We do what we need to do to be able to get through and make sure that they're comforted and looked after and cared for. All those things, super important. If you have a routine of the day and, you know, you have bedtime routines and all of those things, where possible, stick to them as much as you can. But if they go off tangent, they go off tangent. It's absolutely fine. But once your child starts to get better, starting to reintroduce that routine as soon as you possibly can, whether it's, you know, you start suddenly realizing that they will eat breakfast every morning again, or that they do like to eat other things than just the one thing they've wanted to eat when they're poorly, and that, you know, they are sleeping better because they're not so so congested, get back into those little routines. Don't be tempted to just stay, you know, in this kind of moment of, oh, we'll just do whatever we want. Because what happens is our children start to get into a habit because they're going, oh, well, this is what we do now. So if, you know, if you've slept on their bedroom floor whilst they've been poorly and actually they're not poorly anymore, but you're still sleeping there because that becomes an expectation. Now, if you're fine with that, crack on. It's not a problem. It's only a problem if it's a problem for you. But if it's not something you're prepared to keep doing, you only do it when they're poorly, then you need to reinstate it and reinstate those boundaries around it. So whilst they're poorly, you do what you need to do. But as soon as you start to see that they're getting better, start bringing back in that routine. The last thing I'd probably say is, from a parent or carer perspective, lots of people have illness phobias. So lots of people are, you know, particularly worry over certain things. So some people are very worried about temperatures. Some people incredibly worried about a sickness bug. Because
we haven't really talked about sickness bugs, have we? But
no,
we'll probably do another one on sickness bugs actually. But yeah, but people are phobic quite often about that.
They are. And so if you have those worries or those health worries, or that you feel that you don't know how to manage those things, then you need to reach out and get some support on that, because you don't want your children to be picking up on those health worries. But you also need to look after yourself, because if you are panicked by the thought of your child having a sickness bug or your child coming down with a temperature, then you need to kind of work through that and get the support, because it is scary. Having a poorly child is scary. And I think,
definitely,
like I said, don't Google anything. But the problem is, so much is out there on the social media and it's out there in the public domain that you suddenly go, could it be this? Could it be that? And it's great to kind of consider all things, but
you don't want to go down a rabbit hole, do you?
You don't. No. And I'd always say, you know your child best. Trust your parent instinct. Go with your gut. If you are really worried about, you know, your child, and you go to the GP and you're not happy with what the GP tells you, then go again, get a second opinion, because you will know if something, if it's the cough, cold, you know, bug type thing, or whether it's anything more serious.
It's something else. Yeah.
If you are ever
definitely
thinking, you know, and worried, you must always seek medical help, because
escalate it. Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for that. I hope that was helpful, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
That's everything for today. Thanks for listening. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, we'd love you to get in touch and let us know. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Bespoke Family, or head to our website. The links are in our show notes.
Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode, and please give us a rating or review if you like what you hear. We're Bex and Claire, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Newborn to Teen and everything in between. See you then.